This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is indeed the show trainers listen to, and happy to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer Jude Feld. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, and we are coming to you live on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206, and of course streaming worldwide on your computer or mobile device at horseracingradio.net. JT, happy to have you back on board, my friend. Here we go again.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show. Delighted to hear this man's story. Yeah, we see his name in the program, but a lot of people don't know much about him.
And when you Google this person who is our guest tonight, we're leaving you in suspense for a moment, but when you Google him, there isn't a whole lot of information out there on him, but you go to Equibase, and one thing that you see when you pull up his statistics is that he is a multiple graded stakes winning trainer, and a lot of that has to do with his big win back on January 2nd of this year when he sent out El Arib to win the Grade 3 Jerome Stakes at Aqueduct. He is the 41-year-old native of Derry in Northern Ireland. That is Cathal Lynch, who joins us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton this afternoon. He goes by Cal. So, Cal, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me. Delighted.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And Cal, by the way, actually driving from Florida back to his base in Maryland. But Cal, you know, that's okay, because we've had trainers join us from all different parts of the world. As a matter of fact, David Fox joined us on this show, and he did it from his boat when he was fishing out in the Atlantic Ocean. So this is nothing. We'll handle this.
No problem. Glad to do it.
How did a guy from Derry get the nickname Cal?
Well, a lot of people here in America have a hard time saying Cal. The T is silent in my name. It's an Irish name. It's Irish for Charles. So my mom didn't want Charlie Jr. So I got Cal. And it's just easier. That's my initials. So a lot of my stuff on my saddle tails and stuff is C-A-L. So it ended up being Cal. So very American of me, you know.
Yeah, very cool.
Cal, when did you come to the United States?
We came here originally in 94. And I went back there in 95, end of 95, I went back and got married in Ireland, stayed there for a year in 96, and then came back again. And then I've been here ever since, so probably 97 and 98 is when I started training here full-time. I had a couple other jobs first. When I first came here, I dealt in Atlantic City in a casino and had a few other jobs and met my wife there. And ended up back in Ireland for a year. And I just missed America. I missed the way of life here. And we came back and decided to make this home. Year before last, 2 years ago, her and I both became U.S. citizens. We figured we spent more time in America than we had in Ireland. So, well, she's from Croatia. But we spent more time in America than we had in Ireland. So I decided this is home. My two boys were born here. So became American.
You know, we know Northern Ireland is a home of famous golfers. You look at Graham McDowell, and you look at Rory McIlroy and Darren Clark and major winners like that. Who's the most famous horse trainer to come out of Northern Ireland?
Well, that's a fair question. I'm not sure. Maybe it's one of the Sylvester Kirk. He had a few his sons and his training in England. Young Sylvester. My dad used to have horses with his dad. He was probably one of the better ones in Northern Ireland. There's quite a few other guys there. I mean, the Republic of Ireland in the south, there's hundreds of them. You know, Dermot Weld and people like that in the south. But north, it's a small population, so there wouldn't be an awful lot of big trainers coming to the north. Most of the racing is done in the south.
What's the racing like in Northern Ireland?
Very competitive. There's only, like I say, usually Downpatrick and Downroyal would be the two main tracks up there. And most of the guys that train in the north actually run in the south and run in England. We go over there. It's only a boat ride, so a lot of our horses will race in England.
Cal, did you grow up around horses, or did you get into it later in life?
No, I was probably 4 or 5. My dad bought his first horse. He was an owner first, and then decided to build a little farm. So when we were kids, we all rode. My older brother Sean, myself, and Fergal, we all rode what we call like pony racing, like slapping. You know, like we have bush racing here. Most of the states have we race ponies on a Sunday. We race 13-2, 14-2, 15-hand, and then we had 3 open races for horses. So we all rode when we were, I was probably 9 or 10 when I rode my first winner. So that was a lot of fun. We grew up around it from a very young age. But my dad, nobody else before him, he was the first one in his family, I guess. He bought his first racehorse and then got us all. And he's responsible for all this, actually, for all of us being involved in racing. So it was a sport and it was a hobby for him and still is. But we all made careers out of it, myself and Fergal.
Do you know where his love of horse racing came from?
Probably the bookies. It's just, you know, they bet a few dollars or a few pounds over there when they were kids and the horses. And, you know, it's a great sport. It's a sport of kings over there. And, you know, you watch racing on a Saturday. It was big on TV. And when we were growing up, there was a lot of racing on TV. And, you know, once you're around them, you know, financially he wouldn't have been able to when he was younger. His family wouldn't have been wealthy. So over there, it's still a very expensive sport. So whenever he was able to financially do it, then he bought his first. Or bought him and a partner. They bought his first horse. So we took off from there.
How are your other siblings involved in racing, Cal?
Well, my older brother Sean was an amateur jockey, and then he's worked for Ladbrokes and Gibraltar and England and Ireland for probably 15 years. And my younger brother, Fergal, is a jockey.
Yeah, he's not just a jockey.
he's a little better than your average bear. Fergal's a very, very good rider. But I can't say that because he's my brother. I'm expected to say that. But he is. He's one of the best. I think he's one of the best at the hands of any rider I've ever given a leg up to. When we were younger, Sean and I could make horses do things. Fergal could get horses to do things because he wanted to. From a very young age, I'm talking from when he was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. Just a great set of hands. Horses would do things for him that we couldn't make them do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's just a good, very, very good, very, very good horseman, very good rider.
Well, he's on a tremendous roll right now, and it's great to see. It must be fun. Do you guys team up very often?
We don't. He doesn't ride for me as much as he did. Whenever he came back to America from England, he came over here, and Scotty Silver is Trevor's agent. I got Scotty the Dave Fergal's book as well, and he's been very successful. He wrote a lot for us at the beginning. But some of my owners, Trevor and I, have been very, very lucky together, and just worked out that way. But they both have the same agent. It's easier to be brothers than it is to be for me to have him on the horse. I get more angry at him if he makes a mistake than I do at some of the other jockeys, so that doesn't always go over well with the family. So for everybody's sanity, I think it's better that he rides. Listen, if he needed me to help him anymore, I would in a second. But for everybody's sake, I think it's easier this way.
Yeah, it makes it tough at the dinner table when...
it can get a little salty, you know. Guys are getting blamed for things they didn't do and stuff. So, but no, he's a very, very talented rider. I mean, he won on Mondelez. He won the Grade 1 up at Woodbine. I was at home in Ireland. My dad had just recovered from the surgery, and I was home there watching it with them. And if I gave him a heart attack, you know, I was very, very proud of him. That was his first Grade 1. And like I say, Fergal could ride. That was if you watch that race, it was a very, very thrilling race to watch. Came from dead last, which he loves to do. Weaved through the field and just got there in time. But very, very talented rider.
Talking with Cathal Lynch here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Cal, you mentioned your strong relationship with jockey Trevor McCarthy, who was aboard El Arib when he won the Jerome back on January 2nd. If El Arib continues on and by the grace of God, that you make it to the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May. How's that conversation going to go with Fergal when you don't give him a leg up in the Derby?
I'm hoping he's riding the Horse for Grey Emotion Irish War Cry. That's my bailout. Yeah. So, Trevor and I have been very fortunate together, and those owners, MMG, are very loyal with Trevor. He rode Never Gone South and other horses for them as well, so they have a relationship with Trevor, and we don't go fix it if it ain't broke, you know?
Yeah, well, Trevor's a great rider, too. He wins races sometimes when he's not supposed to, a lot like your brother does. Why don't we talk a little bit about El Arib? I mean, this is a really cool horse. I think he has a very high ceiling.
We're very pleased to have him in the barn. This time last year, I was in Ocala and watched him train. Dr. Eisenman had him down there. They bought him in Keeneland, and he had him down there. And I wasn't sure if I could afford him when I watched him train in December, January, February. I was very fortunate to get him. He's just a lovely horse. Does everything right. Very professional. Good feeling. Happy. You know, good doing horse. You know, he'll take a lump out of you if you let him. But he's just a very, very cool horse. Very talented. I've never had. I said it right after the Jerome. And sometimes you say things that you regret later on. I don't. I still believe he's one of the best horses I've ever had my hands on. I haven't got to the bottom of him yet, and I hope I don't anytime soon. He's just easy to be around, and just very talented, very sound, very happy.
Well, that win in the Jerome, Cal, he won by more than 11 lengths and just completely annihilated the field. Share your thoughts on that performance, because it really was eye-catching.
Yeah, everything went according to plan. The tactful went to the lead, and we thought we could just sit off of him but not give him an easy lead. That day, the track, for our first time around two turns, that was a very, very testing track. I know a lot of guys were saying about the time was very slow, and it was, but if you look at the rest of the day, it was a lot slower. They went 23 and changed the first quarter. I seen that come up, and they were five lengths clear of the third horse, and I was very concerned because everything else had gone like 25, 50, and didn't stay there. So when I seen 23 and changed, maybe 23 and 1, I was a little nervous. I was sitting in there holding onto the side of the seats, you know. Then once I seen him get up head-to-head with that horse and looks him in the eye, and the other horse kind of, you know, I'm not sure anything happened to that horse, but he stopped pretty bad. I don't know if it was the track or he just didn't like it or whatever, but whenever he went to the lead, you know, he's a little lazy once he made the lead. We kind of expect him to wait sometimes for the other horses. His first time around two turns, I thought he may get tired a little bit, but you know, he's just very, very talented and very athletic, and wouldn't, you know, it was a muddy track, it was a testing track, but it wouldn't have been his preferred surface. I mean, a few guys thought maybe the mud moved him up a little bit and this and that, but I've seen him work better on a fast track than an off track. It's a little scary.
When you have a horse like that runs off the television screen, first time going two turns and you know, on a really testing track, what kind of adjustments do you have to make coming out of the race?
Keep your fingers crossed and pray. You know, there's not really. Don't fix it if it ain't broke. We'll train the same way going into this race. He's had a couple of nice mile and an eighth work since. That's why I'm driving back today. He's going to work tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. And if he works the way he's been working and goes in there the way he was going under the Withers, the way he was going under the Jerome, you know, can't be overconfident, but you know, he's doing well, and I can't ask him. I can only control my horse or do what I can do with him. I can't control who's in there against him or what they do, but you know, we're just excited. Just want to keep him healthy and fresh, you know.
Yeah, well, he's 3-for-5 lifetime and has won 3 races in a row now. He started his career with a 4th place finish at Parks, came back and was 2nd at Laurel in a maiden special, then broke his maiden, and then wins the James Lewis the Third Stakes, and then takes the Jerome. So what's been the key to that 3-race winning streak?
Well, the first race, he came out of there with a shin. We had a legit excuse for his first race. The owner just said, I thought he was my best 2-year-old in May, and he was kind of ready early. So we went ahead and ran him 4.5, and that wouldn't have been probably his best thing, but he was ready to go. And unfortunately, came out of there with a little shin. We pinfired and just gave him the time, let him grow up. The second race was supposed to be on the turf. We breezed him on the turf, and he was very effective there, too. So we had him on a turf race and ended up coming off and going on the dirt. He ended up in the 12 or 13 hole, going 5.5. So he was very, very wide. If you watch the end of that race, I was more pleased with the finish in that race than anything else. He broke maybe a little tardy, but he made up so much ground. The horse that went wire to wire in there in the rears. I actually was looking at his full brother this morning here at the farm. So, you know, that was a race where he closed galloping out, galloped way past everything. He kind of just started putting it together. That race was the race where I knew we weren't wrong. That he's a talented horse. And then when he came back and broke his maiden, Trevor came in the paddock and just said, "Listen, we're going to the lead. No messing around today." And I said, "Good enough." And that's what he did. Came back in the Lewis. The Lewis actually went very fast. He went 9-4. I think that went faster that day than the Francis. The older horses had gone a race or two later. I was very pleased with that performance. That's when he kind of everybody else got to see what we'd been seeing probably since April or May. And then the Jerome was a dream come true for us. They won a great stake in New York, you know. Very pleased. Pleased to the whole team, you know, my two sons, my wife, and myself. And we have a staff there, maybe 20, 22 people, and every one of them's involved every day. So when everything goes well and you get to play on the big stage, it's a lot of fun for everybody.
Yeah, it's always cool when you have kind of like the house horse, everybody's involved. Do your boys work with you?
Yes, both my boys work. Charlie, he's 18. He got his trainer's license there about a month and a half, 2 months ago, right after his 18th birthday, and he trained his first winner at Charleston. He trains with me, works with me in the barn, but he has a couple of horses of his own, and they had his first winner there at 18, so he's ahead of me. I think I was 20 or 21 before I had my first winner, so he wanted to be ahead of me. But he's a very good horseman in his own right, so hopefully I can keep him around me for another couple of years before he goes out on his own full time, you know. And my other son, Anthony, is 15. He's homeschooled, so he comes to the barn. They're both in there by 4 o'clock in the morning and start and work together. Charlie gallops, and Anthony runs the shed. So, my wife, Danielle, does all the bookwork and stuff, so it's absolutely a family affair, you know.
Cal, what's the most important lesson that you can teach them in terms of training racehorses and get them ready for when they do decide to go out on their own?
Patience. Patience is the most important thing for training horses for me. We like to break babies, you know, develop young horses and bring them along. We've been doing that for a few years, selling them. Usually I had to sell the horses we bought at the sales. We would keep break their maiden and sell them. Thankfully, these guys don't need me to sell. They don't need to sell anything, and we get to keep these good ones. But I think patience and, that's the key, just letting these horses develop the way they're supposed to. And having owners that will support you to do that, that's a massive part of it. You know, as a trainer, you're only as good as your owners will, you know, if they spend the money. If you have guys that will spend money and you have guys that will trust you to do the right thing, and they're willing to wait and be patient with you, the horses will repay you tenfold. That for me is one of the most important things in developing young horses.
Yeah, the patient owner is a rare bird.
We're very fortunate. I have a few clients for the last 20 years that are the guys I started out with, Bo Smith and Carlo Di Tomasi and guys like that. They let me they give me a free hand, and they know we're in the barn every day, 16 hours a day with these horses, 7 days a week. We like horses, you know, and we want to do the right thing by them each and every day. And you have to have the guys around you that are willing to do that. You know, we had an experience when I was training maybe 10, 12 years ago for Bo, and I started the Mammoth Meet. We won the first race the first day, and everything was great. We went the next 8 weeks and didn't win a race, and we had a bunch of Jersey Breds run second, third, and fourth, and I was pulling my hair out. I couldn't figure it out. Everything was, I was zigging when I should have been zagging. Bo called me in the office after training on one Saturday morning. You know, the owner comes over and says, "You know, I need to talk to you." That's not the conversation you want to have. He walked in the office and he told me, "Cal, my horses have never looked this good or trained this good. We're very happy with all these young horses developing. Take your time. If you don't want to run another horse for the rest of the Mammoth Meet, we're fine. You do whatever you think's right. We're with you 100%. I just want you to know that." I didn't run another horse for Bo for 2 weeks. We went to Meadowlands and we won both maturities. We had an absolutely brilliant meet, but you're right, they are a rare bird. They have somebody willing to do the right thing and just take their time, and it's very fortunate. very, very fortunate.
Cal, listening to you talk about those long-term relationships that you've enjoyed with your owners, is it safe to say that a big part of being a successful horse trainer is learning to be good at developing and building relationships?
Yeah, my wife would probably differ in her opinion, but yeah, I do like to develop relationships. You know, she would have maybe a different version of the same story. Yeah, you have to, you know, you have to. They have to trust you, and you have to trust them that they're going to want to do the right thing, and they're going to let, you know. If they don't, you know, it's hard for me. I haven't had too many clients that we've over the years. You know, some guys get out of the business. You know, I mean, those guys will leave, but I have a very few guys leave because of anything to do with the care of their horses. Most of my guys are like I say, Bo's 20 years. He was one of my first clients. Carlo Di Tomasi was my first client. Carlo and I still have horses together to this day. Bo Smith, Dave and Meg Weimer have been with me 5, 6, 7 years now, maybe more. Yeah, recently we've, MMG's a recent client. They were only here the last 2 years. And then Matt Shearer's a new client this year, thanks to Benahini. But we have a lot of really good clients right now, and we're very, very fortunate.
Well, you know, I'm sure, too, over the years that you've had people that, you know, maybe for whatever reason haven't really gelled or fit your philosophy or vice versa. What's the most bizarre thing that an owner has ever asked you to do with their horse?
Not too many of them. Most of the guys that I train for are breeders and stuff. They know the business. Nothing really bizarre. We've never really had any bizarre. We've had people want me to run more often or do things a little different. And I'm that's probably why I train 40 and not 200. That's one of the reasons that I wouldn't have a lot of tolerance for anybody asking me to do anything that might jeopardize their horse. So my tolerance, my fuse is probably a little shorter than most. I'm pretty adamant about doing the right thing by the horse every time. You know, so I can't really think of anything. I have a few things in mind, but I definitely won't say it on the radio.
Do you spend a lot of time educating your clients?
Some of the newer clients, you know, if they're relatively new, MMG are relatively new to American racing. They've had horses in Saudi and things. So we'll just tell them, you know, how I like to do things. Mohammed Al-Ghahadi is the principal for MMG. He's very easy, you know. My last conversation with me, he told me, I said, well, I have a few new advisors. I have a few people call me after the race. They try and tell me what we should do with this or should do with that. He says, boss, you are driving the bus. We're along for the ride. You're driving the bus. So that gives me a lot of confidence. Train for a guy like that. They know we're doing everything we can by the horse, and we'll do the right thing every day. But you don't really. Most of my clients are all, like I say, breeders or been in the business for a while, and they can ask me anything, you know. I mean, usually they'll call or text, and we'll talk about. I discuss, you mean, where we're going or what our plans are and things like that. But when it comes down to day to day stuff, you know, they let me do my job, and that's what makes us more successful, I guess.
Cathal Lynch.
I have an advantage from seeing the horses every day, you know. So
Cathal Lynch making his way from Florida back to his base in Maryland. He is our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton this afternoon. Cal, it must be great when you get to deliver all the positive news to these owners that you've had the association with for a long time. But the other side of being a horse trainer is sometimes you have to make the call that's not positive. How difficult is that for a trainer to have to make that call to their clients?
Terrible. It's the worst phone call you can make in racing. They tell an owner something bad's happened to their animal. On Saturday, we were breezing a lot of horses on Sunday morning. We had a horse, just stumbled after she worked 3/8 out of the gate and stumbled when she got the 3/8 pole going to pull up and flipped over and Forest Voice was on the filly and got hurt, but she went to hospital. Everything's okay. The filly got up and everything was okay, but I had to call Mandy Pope and Todd Quast at Goldmark, and I had them on speakerphone explaining exactly what happened. And I mean, everything worked out okay this time, but 3 hours later, we won 2 stakes. that's the business, you know. In the morning, you're making a phone call like that, saying, you know, I'm hoping this filly's okay, and we'll watch her for the next few days. And then a few hours later, you win a couple of stakes, and everything's really good. So the business is, it's up and down, and it's, you know, a good owner for me is someone that takes bad news well. Anybody can take good news, but a good owner can take bad news well. You know, we're not out there trying to hurt any horse, but they're athletes, and injuries happen. You know, just ask the Green Bay Packers. You know, things happen. The guys get hurt all the time, and horses get hurt the same way. They're equine athletes, and unfortunately, it's part of the business. It's not a part we enjoy, but it's a part of the business.
Yeah, it's very good when an owner takes that in stride, and that usually comes with longevity in the business. The owners that have been around a long time, they understand that a little bit better than the newbies.
Absolutely, yeah. No, that's the key, guys. You know, if you've been around them long enough, you'll see just about everything. And when you think you've seen everything, something else will happen. So, yeah, you know, it's a tough part of the business. You don't like to make those phone calls by any stretch. But.
Cal, we're coming up on that commercial break in about 2 minutes from right now, but you mentioned your wife and her involvement in your business. Talk about her role and what she does to help you be successful.
She's a backbone. All the business, all the banking and all the billing. And, you know, I've learned a lot more about 941s and W-2s and 1099s in the last few years with the employees. I mean, but she takes care of all that stuff, and that makes it a lot easier for me and the boys to concentrate on training and the day-to-day stuff in the barn. When you have somebody behind you like that, she's there 22 years. You know, it's massive, it's an absolutely massive help. It takes a lot of pressure off, and couldn't do it without her.
Yeah, well, you have to have somebody like that involved. There's no doubt about it if you're going to be successful. And Jude, you and I have heard that from several trainers that have come on this program that work with their wife or their husband, whatever it might be. You have to have that person by your side and have them in sync with you.
Yeah, it's really helpful when you have somebody that knows the business and is interested in the business, because it's a lifestyle, really. It's not just a job.
All right, Cal Lynch, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to continue this visit in the second half of the program. We'll look back on some of his other memorable moments, and we'll tell you about him making the move from Pennsylvania over to Maryland last year and how that's worked out. It's been pretty good. Cal Lynch continues on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right after this on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The heat is on. Fasig Tipton is now accepting nominations to the Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale takes place March 1st, 2017 at Gulfstream Park with an under-tax show on February 27th. Having outperformed the market last year with massive gains over 2015, including an increased median of 92%, an increased average of 45%, and a top price of $1.8 million, the Gulfstream sale was the only sale that displayed a fully upward trajectory among the 7 juvenile sales hosted by North American auction companies. 6 buyers spent more than $1 million. 20 buyers spent $500,000 or more, and the top 11 hips in last year's sale were purchased by 10 unique entities and consigned by 9 unique entities. Nominate now. It's the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 1st, 2017 at Gulfstream Park.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
So Ella Reeb is now the leader. Takaful's back into second. Now 2 lengths behind. Now 3 lengths behind. Win with Pride is racing in third. And True Timber comes through toward the inside fourth. Everybody Loves Rudy is under pressure on the wide outside in fifth as they turn for home. But they are all far behind Ella Reeb. Ella Reeb heading for the eighth pole, clear by 9, maybe 10 lengths. Bonus Points comes on to be second. Win with Pride on the outside and True Timber, but they're inside the final furlong. And it's all Ella Reeb. Ella Reeb put away Takaful and everybody else and romps in the Jerome. Wins it by 10 lengths on the wire. Bonus Points was second, True Timber was third, and Win With Pride was fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Continuing to visit with trainer Cathal Lynch, and Cal, as he goes by, has saddled 683 winners in his career, but maybe none bigger than El Arib, who dominated that Jerome Stakes, the call you just heard coming out of the commercial break. He's on his way to the Withers next, and then we'll see where he goes from there. Cal, is the plan to keep El Arib on that New York route all the way to the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, all things being the same, if he does well in the Withers, I don't know about Takaful. I'll speak to Muhammad and Jefferson and Glenn Brock, and we'll get together after decide after the race where we go. But I'd probably like to skip one of them, so maybe the Gotham and come back for the Wood. The horses run enough times this year already. He's got, if he has another, if he can get some more points there, then we maybe look at just the Wood instead of the Gotham. I'm not sure.
I'm glad you bring up.
I'd like to have him a little fresh. I'd like to have him a little fresher for a run. He's not going to get a break. Hopefully after that for at least 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you bring up that foundation that he has under him and all the starts. I mentioned that he's made 5 starts already. 1 start as a 3-year-old. How important is it for a young horse and a prospective Derby horse that might have to run 1.25 miles on the first Saturday in May, how important is it for them to have that solid foundation of a few starts under their belt before they get to that 3-year-old season?
For me, I think it's very important, but every horse is an individual, so you just got to go horse by horse. Some horses can handle it. This horse has gained weight between races. He's physically maturing. I even thought he was a little fat in the paddock when he walked in there for the Jerome, but that's just him. He's doing so well. If they continue to do well between races and they continue to grow and develop, then you can keep going with them. And he enjoys training, loves to do it. It doesn't take. It's very effortless for him, so it doesn't take as much out of him. So he can handle it. We'll let him do it. He's happier doing that than trying to make him do something he doesn't want to do. So a happy horse tends to run for you.
You mentioned the points, and how much of a pain is that to deal with as you're getting a horse ready for the Derby, worrying about the points?
I don't really worry about it so much as if he doesn't have enough to get in there, then it becomes a problem. If he's not good enough to run well in the Withers and run the same in the Wood, then I wouldn't want to go to the Derby. I don't want to go there unless he's showing that he wants to go there, These owners are very, very patient, and they just want to do the right thing. There's a lot of nice 3-year-old races out there all year for them. And obviously, listen, don't get me wrong, I want to go there, and everybody and their brother wants to be there on that first Saturday of May, but not at the cost of the horse. So he'll have to prove that he belongs there. We don't want to go there just for the sake of being there, 30 or 40 to 1. So if we go there, we'd like to think that we're going in there, off a couple of good races. If he hits the board in the Wood, and that should get enough points right there to get in. So that's why I'm thinking about skipping the Gotham. I don't want to make it just avoid points.
Cal, when you were growing up in Northern Ireland, would you watch the Kentucky Derby every year?
Yeah, obviously the Epsom Derby in England would have been the big race for us over there growing up, but we would always watch the Kentucky Derby for sure. We had Steve Cawthon and Cash Asmussen and those guys riding in Ireland when I was growing up. I got to watch them every, 3 or 4 days a week, especially on a Saturday there. We'd have been watching a lot of racing, and Saturdays and Sundays, but those guys, they came with a lot of very stylish. Ferga would have probably copied those guys more than he's more of an American rider than a typical European rider. He wouldn't have as much body motion and stuff, and I think that's attributed to those guys watching American racing and watching American riders over there. They are, you know, a little more stylish. I'm not saying they're more effective, I'm just saying they're more stylish. I don't want anybody getting on the phone there and getting mad at me and saying I'm no longer Eric. There's some very good jockeys. Kieran Fallon and those guys are all very, very good riders. Pat Edry, Lester Piggott and stuff, so they might not look as fashionable as some of the guys here, but they are definitely as effective.
Yeah, it is.
Just wanted to clarify. Just wanted that on the record.
Well done.
Yeah, you know, it's like the difference between the East Coast bias and the West Coast bias. People get a little touchy sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I'm not too packing Biggie or any of that stuff, but
Well, if you're wondering about some of that background noise that you're hearing when Cal is with us here on Trainer Talk, talking with Cathal Lynch, by the way, he is driving from Florida to Maryland, which is his new home base. And I say new, he's been there for about a year after relocating his family and his entire operation from Pennsylvania to Maryland. He was based at Parks for about a dozen years and has made that move, and it's all worked out pretty well. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And, of course, follow the Horse Racing Radio Network on social media at HRRN on Twitter. And you can also follow our Spanish division at HRRN en Español. All right, Cal, so I mentioned making that move from Pennsylvania to Maryland about a year ago. Talk about the reasons for finally deciding to do that and to relocate to Maryland.
Okay, I just want to blame Sal Sinatra. It's all his fault. Sal was the racing secretary at Parks for most of my career up there, and him and I would consider Sal a friend. And it just got Parks was just got a little difficult there towards the end. The last year or two up there, there's a lot of positives. There's a lot of frustration for some of my owners and myself. You're running second and spots where you just know you know just a little questionable. They weren't very consistent, and Sal moved from Parks and moved to Laurel and became the CEO down there. And I went to see him one day. I was down there racing, and I went to see him, and I told him I was thinking about making the move. And he said, whatever we can do to help, let me know, and we'll make it happen. So I went back, talked to the wife, and got together. And within a couple of weeks, we just decided I put the house on the market and sold, and I was down in Maryland. Day after Christmas, Boxing Day, we moved down there, and I didn't go back. I just stayed. I stayed in the hotel there for about a month, and then I rented a house for a year. And my wife stayed up home, packed the house, sold the house. I never even went back for a closing or anything. She did everything. And me and the boys were in Maryland, and I just started training there. And Sal, true to his word, we got a great barn over there. We got it all the way we wanted. We got a nice private barn right there at the 3/8 pole, and we got it fixed up and set up the way we wanted, and very, very grateful to him and Tim Ritfo and Coleman Blind and George Ann Hale. Those guys have been, you know, it's a great place to want racing, and there's a reason that their handle's gone up 20% in the last couple of years. It's, you know, those guys all care. Everybody in the racing office cares, and they actually like horses, and they want the horse racing to succeed. Parks was just a little different. It was just became difficult whenever the casino became more of a priority than the horses, and I just felt like for my son to grow up, I wanted to train horses, that Maryland was going to give him a better opportunity to do that going forward. And so far, we're absolutely blessed. So it's been very, very good for us, for the whole family. Everybody loves it, and even my three dogs, you know, we moved down here. So we're buying a house this week, or we're supposed to close next week on a house up here right by the 5 minutes from the track. So we're making it a permanent move.
Well, they've done such a great job with Laurel, fixing it up and making it a great place to race. And what a rich tradition of thoroughbred racing that Maryland has. It's a real horse country there. It reminds me a lot of Lexington as you're driving around where the farms are And it's just a beautiful place, and people are into the racing there because of the longstanding tradition. So I think that was pretty wise of you. They're really on the way up.
Yeah, we left New Jersey whenever the Pennsylvania were getting the slots, so we kind of got there just before they got the slots. And I felt like this was a similar type of move that I just moved to Maryland, as they're on the Ascension. Not that PA is not going to stay there or do well, but I just think Maryland, for me personally, is just more invested in horses and the breeders there. And like I say, there's some really good horsemen, some really good trainers, Dickie Small and the Dutros and the Capuanos, and those guys have been in Maryland, and Buddy Delp and all those guys. I mean, there's the list goes on for Maryland horsemen, and to be seen as a Maryland horseman, I'm very proud of that fact. Now, they've taken us under the wing, and when LRE won, those guys couldn't be any happier for us, and they share up. They're a big part of our success, and we want Maryland to enjoy it, and hopefully we're considered a Marylander right now. We're very proud of that, and like I say, I'm delighted for my boys to grow up and see racing on the Ascension as opposed to going the other way.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point, and a point that I brought up on the program for many, many years. Jude and I have focused on Maryland racing when we get to the Preakness and we get to Maryland Showcase Day and all those different big days that Maryland now features. And that's the fact that they are more focused on the racing product than they are on the casino part. And I think that that's a huge, huge selling point when you're talking about people in the racing industry that might want to relocate to a certain area. But when you do relocate your entire operation, Cal, even if it's only going from Pennsylvania to Maryland, there's a lot of things to think about. Number one is the owners, and number two is all of your help. And then you mentioned your family. Talk about some of those things that you had to take into consideration before you made that move.
All of the above. I mean, the family thing, my wife's been 100% behind me from the get-go, so that wasn't a difficult decision. She knew I wasn't happy the way things were going at Parks, and she says, I do this because I love it. I don't feel like I go to work every day. If this was a job for me, I couldn't do it. You don't make enough money, and you work too many hours, and we haven't had vacations in a couple of years at a time. So for us, go to Maryland wasn't a hard decision for the family. We were able to relocate that part of it. The owners, every one of them, every single owner, every one of them supported us, understood why we were doing what we were doing, and were only too happy to come with us. Just about everybody came. When I asked them, I told them what my plans were and what I was thinking about, and everyone. We've raced in Maryland a lot over the years. They have a great stakes program, year-round stakes program for a lot of our younger horses. The Marshua and those races we raced in last weekend, and they have a great program, and most of my owners love Maryland racing, have loved Maryland racing. One of my biggest successes before LRE was Javert. We won the General George at Laurel. That was my biggest win before the Jerome, and like I said, we've been coming here for a few years. So we weren't shocked, and they definitely weren't disappointed, and they were very, very supportive. And I can't thank them enough for that, every one of them.
Cathal Lynch with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, making that move to Maryland about a year ago. It's worked out pretty well. Cal, who are some of the other horses? You mentioned El Arib and the other horses that you've had some success with, but who are a couple others that when you think back on your career, you say, this is a horse, for whatever reason, I'm never going to forget?
Javert, being my first graded stakes winner, he's actually going to be my pony. He went home for 6 months to Goldsmith's Farm, and he went to another farm there on last Wednesday, and he's going to get a Western saddle put on him. We're going to try and make him into one of our next ponies. That horse is very special to me, that whole family. I had his sister, Arfantine. We won the sorority, and we won the futurity and stuff with her at Monmouth. I had her mother, Arcosette. We won the futurities with her. That family has been very special for me. I love that whole family. They've been the ones we didn't sell. Bose is a commercial breeder as well, but the ones we've kept and raced, we were very, very successful with them. That family's been very, very good to me. I had my first stakes winner was Holiest Punch. That horse was your first stakes winner is always going to be very special. That little horse was, I was galloping back then. It was about 50 pound lighter, maybe more. So he was a very good horse. I had a horse down to Trice. Mr. Ford got me from Gainsway. He bought him as a, bought her as a two-year-old in training, and she won the Park Soaks for us. It was a big deal for me to train for Gainsway, and they were very, very, Mr. Beck was very, very supportive, gave us the filly, let us do what we wanted, and she came back and she won the Park Soaks. She was fourth in the at the Acorn. She lost a shoe that day. She's in a stake this weekend, I think. Sam Houston, maybe, in a graded stake down there.
Yep.
She went back. She went to Steve Asmussen, but that filly was my brother Sean was here with us at the time, and that filly was very special for us. We thought the world of her, and that would have been our first Grade One. We were very confident that she hadn't lost her shoe. I'm not sure, and she wouldn't have been a lot closer that day. But she did win the Park Chokes, and she beat some nice fillies that day. I think of who else. I don't want to leave anybody out, but we've been very fortunate. Evelyn, I won a few stakes for the Weimers, and we were third in a contingent for them with a filly called Daring Reality. You know, she won the Busanda maybe in Belmont for us, and then she was third in the contingent, and that was a thrill for the Weimers. They've been very supportive the last few years with some nice fillies. I think who else? Never Gone South last year. We got on a little run with him. He won three stakes maybe last year for us, and he's coming back. He just had a second race back there. He was second last week. He's coming off a little layoff, and we're hoping to come back maybe in the General George with him this year. That's a race I'd like to win back. I think Paige McKenney's going to make it work for it. But there's a, you know, those kind of horses, we're very fortunate they've had them over the years. A lot of good support from Mr. Ford. He sent me a horse called Lynx. We ran second in the Prince of Wales up there. We got on the, that was my first taste of the Triple Crown, even though it was a state bred. And I think it was still a nice, it was a nice introduction. That horse was very good for us. Very lucky. Very, very lucky we've had some nice horses over the years.
You know, Cal, the answer to this next question very well could be one of the horses that you just mentioned. But you think about every athlete, and they all seem to have that one moment in their career that they say, hey, this was my signature moment. This was my signature game performance. Golfers will say, this was my signature shot. This was the best shot that I ever hit. How about for you as a trainer, the best training accomplishment, the best training job that you have ever done with any one horse? What would it be?
It would be Javert. I would say winning the General George with that little horse. He's a homebred. He was a, he's my outflanker, little Maryland stallion. Going into that race, we had a good program, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months ahead. It was probably one of my better training jobs. It was one of the few races that I've gone into that I wasn't nervous. Usually I'm absolutely a wreck day or two before. You can't even talk to me. I'll be in a bad mood and snapping at everybody when I'm nervous about a horse going into a race. That horse, I felt going down the road that day, my wife even commented, you're very calm today, you need me to pull over. I'm like, no, today I feel like I have everything in place, everything went absolutely perfect, training-wise, going into the race. He came walking over to the race, and he's got a terrible walk. You know, he's got screws in him, and he's, you know, all kinds of surgery. And Mr. Smith looked at me, and when he seen him coming walking over, and he's paddling, you know, he's a wide walk, and he's, you almost think he's halfway lame. We had a get him off, you know, the vets, the first four races that horse ran, the vets wanted to scratch him every time. That's just, he was just a bad mover, just a, not a not a nice moving horse, but perfectly sound, just not a nice moving horse. And he came walking towards us, and Bo Smith says, oh my God. I said, listen, it's not a walking race, don't worry about it. When he gets there, quarter pole, look for him there. And sure enough, that day, we beat, I think, Colleen Shah had a horse in there for Bob Baffert, had a horse in there. Il Villano was in there for a friend of mine. He beat some nice horses that day, but everything went absolutely perfect going into that race. I couldn't have been more confident than my first graded stakes win, and I was very relaxed for whatever reason. That was probably my best training performance.
How often does that feeling hit you when that you kind of know inside this horse is going to win today? How often does that hit you?
Very rare. you trained horses, you know. You like to think that to yourself. You would never say it out loud. Going into some of the bigger races, you want things to go the way you envision it in your head. You have a fair idea. You know, we're wrong 80% of the time, and we're still very good at our jobs.
There is that feeling, and it doesn't happen very often, like you say. It's like I trained horses for 20 years, maybe three or four times I felt like I couldn't lose, you know, I was right three out of the four.
Well, you're very good at 75%.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I'm still mad about the one that missed.
Yeah, well, we've all got one of those, you know. Yeah.
Cal, do you typically get nervous before a race?
Oh, yeah. I could be running a horse at Penn National for a maiden five, and I'd still be nervous. And the day that I'm not, it's probably the day that I don't want to be training anymore.
Yeah, we hear that sentiment from a lot of jockeys, too. They'll say, if you're not nervous, if you don't have butterflies before a race, then you know what? Maybe this isn't for you anymore. Maybe you're just not ready.
Right.
You've lost that passion.
We're passionate. We want to win, obviously, every time you go over there. But we get excited, and, you know, my dogs will be barking. My wife will be standing on the sofa screaming at the TV. You know, we go nuts. We've been nuts. We get excited and we cheer our horses home, and I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, some people are a little more conservative. We're not. We'll get the hooter and a holler. You'll know we were there.
It's got to be great to do that with your sons.
It's a dream come true. We have a second generation trainer, and just one of the nicest kids. I mean, he's mine, but he is just a nice. Anybody that knows him will tell you he's just a nice kid. He's put up with me for 18 years, so he's got to be a saint. He loves it. He's been that way since he's 4 years old, coming to the barn, and he's never really wanted to do anything else. I'm begging him to go to school, to veterinary college, or go do, and this is what he wants to do for right now. I said, well, do it for another year or so and see how you feel. You know, you can always, don't give up the idea of going to he play soccer for state teams and stuff. He can get scholarships and whatnot, but he absolutely is adamant that he's wanted to be a trainer from his four, and I'm not going to change him. I thought I could sicken them by being in the barn with me every day, and maybe that would push them the other way, but it's made it worse. They're as passionate. You know, we're sitting down to dinner there at 6 o'clock at night, and Charlie's bringing over a condition book, and then he's bringing over the sales catalog, and we're looking at Timonium sales, and we're looking at the sales in Ocala today. You know, he's constantly just, he loves it, and that's something. If you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. So I encourage them to do something that they're passionate about and that they want to do, because there's a lot of long days, and you know better than anybody. It's a tough business, and I don't think it's getting any easier for the young guys coming in. But I think it's they're blessed if they get to do something they love. So I hope he loves it as long as we've. You know, I've loved it my whole life, and I've been very, very fortunate.
Cal, only about 3 minutes left in the program. It has really flown by, and Jude and I have really enjoyed hearing your story and spending a little time with you on Trainer Talk here tonight. But before we wrap it up, you mentioned in the first half of the show that when you first came here to the United States, you spent some time in Atlantic City as a dealer at a casino. If you weren't training horses, what else do you think you might be doing?
I can't imagine my life not being associated with animals of some sort. You know, I would have to be around. I have to be doing something with animals. I don't know, working in SPCA or something like that. That advertisement for that bothers me every time I see those ads on the, you know, for the welfare animals and stuff. I would have to do something involved with animals. You know, for me, it's horses. It would have to be something to do with animals and something like that. I'd be tough to, as an employee, to work for somebody now after being on your own and training for yourself and working for yourself for this many years. I don't know how good I would be. I would be miserable if I wasn't doing this, you know.
Are there any other interests that Cathal Lynch has outside of horse racing? Do you enjoy sports or anything else that you might enjoy doing when you're not at the races?
Yeah, we love, my wife's worse than me for the NFL. We watch a lot of college football. We're big Notre Dame fans. You know, typical Irish. What do you expect?
But, shocker.
Yeah, go figure. But we watch a lot of NFL. You know, and that's we do a lot of sports. Anything sports oriented, we'll be watching. Both my boys played soccer for, like I say, up in the state in PA, and for high school, and for their club teams. They're both very active. We love anything to do with sports, basically. But no, the hobbies thing is something that my wife has a problem with. I don't do anything other than horses. I tried golfing a few times. I'm not nearly as good as Fergal. Fergal takes my money every time. So that kind of soured me on golf. I don't like getting beat, especially not your little brother. But, yeah, we're very passionate about the racing and sports. That would be it for us. We're very simple, straightforward. She'd probably like to go a little more traveling, a little more vacations, but this business isn't always designed for that. Something's always running, or somebody's always got a breeze, or something's always coming up. So, we get attached to the barn, but it's a way of life for us. So, we wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, and it's a way of life that's working quite well for Cathal Lynch, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton this evening. Cal, can't thank you enough for taking the time to visit with us. Want to wish you all the best moving forward with El Arib and your entire stable, and we will be cheering for you. We'll look forward to catching up with you again.
Thanks very much. Pleasure.
All right, drive carefully. Cal Lynch with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Here we go. I mean, it never gets old, JT.
No, that was fun. And yeah. got through the whole show without an expletive.
Not one. He was worried about that.
I know, that's good.
He's Irish, I'm Italian. That could have been combustible.
Yeah, very much so.
Not the case. Great stuff. And if you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast at your leisure. It'll be posted for you right there, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for our special guest, Cathal Lynch, and for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.